evening, everyone. Welcome to the board. Welcome to our village board meeting tonight. Would you stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okey-doke. We'll call our meeting to order. Roll call, Trustee Harris.
Here.
Trustee Genrick.
Here.
Trustee Atwood.
Here.
President Rafter here. Trustee Dart.
Here.
Trustee Green.
Here.
Trustee Sampson.
Here.
Thank you. We are all here. Do I have a motion to modify or adopt the agenda as presented?
Move to adopt as presented.
Thank you. Trustee Atwood. Do I have a second? Trustee Harris. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Announcements. Saturday, September 15th, there's a block party being taken place at 2801 South Webster by the CP Center. They are celebrating a long project of adding, putting on an addition and rehabbing their existing structure. They invite the community to join them. They will have entertainment. It's from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. So go and visit. They've done a beautiful job with it, and you get to see that. The budget. It's that time of year. The budget's coming up, and we will have budget workshops on Monday, October 22nd at 5 p.m., and we will have a second one on Thursday, October 25th, if one is required. We will then have a budget hearing on Tuesday, November 20th, as long as everything else goes as scheduled, because we are required to publish a budget summary 15 days prior to the hearing. So, if all goes well, we'll be talking about the budget here on November 20th. Office hours in the village of Alloway are changing from summer hours to regular hours, I guess, right? Right. We won't say that word summer. It's getting cold. Not yet. But office hours are changing starting September 4th, starting today, from 7:30 a.m. to 4 p.m., Monday through Friday. Staff, are there any other announcements? Fellow board members, are there any announcements? Hearing none, we will move on to agenda item number 4. As many of you know, over the last couple of years, we have been talking about the potential of closing the Green Bay Correctional Institution, replacing it with some type of high-end mixed-use development. And we had a vision created by a gentleman by the name of David Robillard, here in a resident of Alloway. And he put together workshops, came up with what many believe to be an absolutely beautiful vision for what could take place on the prison property as well as the property on the west side of 172 from the prison. And we went to St. Norbert College a while ago and said, we'd like you to do an economic impact study. And they said, well, what's going to be there? And we said, high-end mixed-use development. And they said, okay, well, what's going to be there? So that's why we went through the exercise with David. And we contracted with St. Norbert College to conduct the study. And we held a press conference today to release those findings. And I will say, I think you'll find it very exciting. So we have asked the lead author of this study to join us this evening and give us a high-level presentation of what the findings were so that you can get excited as everyone else did today and share the word with your friends, family, and neighbors. I would like to introduce Dr. Mark Schaefer from St. Norbert College. He's had a very long day, so we put him at the beginning of the agenda. Mark, would you come up, please?
Sure. Good evening, everybody. Thanks for letting me address the crowd today. It's a pleasure to be here. As President Radford basically alluded to, we've been working for a little while now to put together a study on the potential economic impact of what could happen in this space if it were to be redeveloped. Sorry, my day job is teaching, so I'll talk loud enough. Hello? Is that any better? Hello? Hello? Screen that up? Hello? Hello? Can you hear me now? Is that better? All right, there we go.
And Dr. Schaefer, if you would also maybe give us a little overview of your area within St. Norbert.
Oh, absolutely. So I actually am an associate professor of economics, teach economics at St. Norbert. I also direct something called the Center for Business and Economic Analysis. We basically do projects with businesses, nonprofits, local government, to basically help answer research questions that they effectively may have, which is how we got hooked up with Jim and Brad, who we've been talking to extensively pertaining to this project. So what I'd like to do today is present some of the findings of the study, a little bit about the process of the study, and sort of hopefully give you guys a good sense of what the key takeaway items might be as it pertains to the conceptual plan that was presented, I guess a month and a half ago maybe, to the village by Mr. Robelin. So really what I want to do today is just talk through sort of introduction objectives, what the study is really, what it is saying and what it's not saying, which is an important distinction in a study like this, and then walk through sort of the process, quickly review the conceptual plan. Many are familiar with the plan, but we'll review that quickly, and then talk about the things that we really are excited about, which are the potential annual economic impacts, as well as then potential property valuation, property tax revenue, which is the fun stuff, obviously, for the village and the community. And then we'll talk about a couple of considerations and alternatives and some inflation adjustment, which is fun for me as an economist because that's what I was talking about. So we can jump right into this. As everybody in the room knows, I'm not going to dwell on this too much. We know the Green Bay Correctional Institution has been around since 1898. It's the second oldest correctional institute in the state, and there's been a lot of conversation over the years of potentially putting money into renovating this facility to make it current to modern maximum security standards, or potentially relocating it elsewhere. And if that were to happen, of course, the follow-up question is, well, what do we do with the space? We can do some sort of economic development. And our study is not designed to answer the question whether or not we should renovate the prison or move the prison. That's a state-level decision. There's other studies going on that are looking at that question in particular. The purpose of our study was really to add information to the conversation about what could happen with this space. And in particular, what we're really answering with this study, or attempting to answer, is if this space were to be redeveloped and the prison moved, what could be the annual economic impact to Brown County if that were to happen? So that's the very specific question that we're trying to address with this study that we put together. The other thing I'd like to stress too, as Jim alluded to jokingly when he came to me with Brad and said, we want to do a study, and I said, what are you going to put there? And he said, a mixed-use development. We needed something specific to say, what are we analyzing? So all the results that we're talking about here today are really talking about the one particular plan that was designed by Mr. Robillard, and these are the numbers that we're discussing today. If a different plan were to come to fruition, if this were to happen, obviously the results are going to be different. So the analysis we're talking about pertains specifically to the plan that was constructed and created by Mr. Robillard and the Village of Alloway that was presented to us. So if we're going to get into some of the more of the details here, this is a conceptual plan, as most of you are hopefully familiar with. You guys have seen this. There's obviously a tremendous amount of information in terms of what is happening in this plan. I think for me, some of the key highlights, and this was alluded to at the very beginning of the entire process, you know, the goal of this is really to build a space that the local community can live, play, and work in together. And this is basically what this plan really, really does. So as a quick overview, as many are familiar with the plan, we're looking at the parcel, the existing GBCI parcel is right here. This section of the plot land where the current prison sits is about 50 acres. The conceptual plan that was drawn up also includes adding the riverfront property here that's currently owned by the Wisconsin DNR. This would add another 14 acres here, so you're looking at a redevelopment of about 64 acres right in the Village of Alloway's backyard here. In the plan, there's a host of different kind of economic enterprises, anything from retail establishments to restaurants to commercial office space to a host of different residential amenities, as well as littered throughout the property and throughout the parcel is a lot of community park space to bring people together, which is one of the important things about whatever happens with this plan, that's an important thing to consider. So just to give the highlights in this immediate parcel here, referring to it as the Riverside Drive parcel, a lot of park space, specifically a lot of community amenities, volleyball courts, tennis courts, rock climbing wall, there's a zip line in there, sculpture garden, all kinds of those amenities, as well as a boutique hotel right at the corner with Riverside Drive and Highway 172, a little breakfast cafe, and a nice outdoor event space for a good farmer's market, car shows, and things of the like. As we go into sort of more of the existing GPCI building structure right now, this is our main core building that is a historical marker, so this plan sort of calls for keeping that structure intact and doing a lot of renovation inside. This space would contain a mix of different kinds of amenities, a prison museum, commercial space, a lot of office space, industrial office space, a lot of retail kiosk space, artist lofts, possibly a restaurant in there as well. As you go back down the parcel, other things in here, there's a nice event facility with there's a big rotunda in there that could be leveraged, a gym and health club. The next areas where we really see the bulk of the hardcore economic enterprise development. This is going to be a bank of retail stores, about 20 retail stores in there, with bookends of a coffee shop and a little grocery type store. All of this is going to open up into this nice walkable gathering space, and right at the precipice here is where we find a distillery, a brewery to really bring people together in that space and enjoy the outdoors. Running to the middle here is a nice water feature with a host of pop-up eateries. And the nice thing about the way this plan was designed is it sort of segments this park into two sections. The bottom parcel here is going to house a lot of the residential real estate in the property. Specifically, these would be condos and townhomes. These would be apartment buildings. And at the top here, we break off and have this cluster of three-story buildings that will contain a mix of corporate office space, retail shops, and some luxury apartments, loft apartments on the second and third floor. If we jump to the riverfront parcel, this is another area where they're trying to definitely want to tie people together along the Fox River Trail. Performance amphitheater here, nice water feature. Gazebo right on the water. This is an event facility of sorts, kind of some wedding venues there. I don't believe there's any wedding venue right now that actually sits along the river, so that would be a nice addition to the space. And then this would be, rounding out the parcel over there, would be some luxury duplex units. Right on the water there, and then this also has the potential, obviously, to connect on the other side of Highway 172 with the Heritage Hill establishment to sort of tie a lot of that space together. So this is all the work of Ms. Robillard and taking in some of the stakeholder feedback from some of the citizens that were involved in the process. None of this is actually anything that we did with the center, but this is actually what we were given to assess the potential economic impact of. Now, when I saw the plan, aside from being excited about the visual, my immediate question was, I need some more information about what's the physical space that we're talking about. So the next thing we did is take everything that was put together in the plan, and we broke it out into what is the physical size of these different things that we're talking about. And if you look across the parcel, there's a good amount of commercial real estate in terms of office space. There's about 180,000 square feet of office space in this plan. In terms of residential real estate between the apartments, condo townhouses, and the duplexes, you're looking at about 200,000 square feet combined of potential new residential space in the community. And then we also have a nice breakout of about 70,000 square feet of retail space, another 38,000 square feet of potential restaurant space. And the last thing was looking at some hospitality event spaces, facilities, etc., that could be used to generate some more economic activity. So what we did is really focus on understanding what these numbers are for our study, because that's going to be the backbone of creating what we need to do the study that we need to do. So to give a little bit of context before we get to the nuts and bolts of it, a couple things about the study before we start to talk about some of the process and the end results. In every economic impact study, the first question I always ask is, what is the thing you want to study the economic impact on? And when I say thing, I mean what is the actual region we're talking about? So for us, it was natural to think about what is the economic impact of this potential redevelopment site, specifically on the Brown County region. That would make the most sense that we're going to have a good footprint. So everything we're talking about is pertaining to the economic impact on Brown County. The other thing, as it pertains to doing an economic impact study, is thinking about how we're going to measure different facets of it. So a typical economic impact study on something that already physically exists is I go to an economic enterprise and we ask them, okay, tell me how many people you currently employ, what do you guys pay in labor income, and what do you guys do in terms of output, sales, revenues, et cetera, for your operation. And they have the actual data to use, and then we use that data to do some analysis to look at the total impact on the local economy. Of course, we quickly realized the problem with this study is none of this actually exists. So we had to work through a process of building estimates of what we think the sales, the jobs, the income would be for this hypothetical conceptual plan. To do that, and I'll give you guys more detail on this later, to do that, basically, a lot of it pertains to finding comparable entities that currently exist, getting a sense for how much they generate in revenue per square foot, and then we can apply that to our square footage estimates to build out a prediction of what this could be worth in terms of revenue, and we can use some of our software then to back out companies in this space with this amount of revenue would likely employ this many people and generate and pay this much in income. That's the general idea of what we did, although I'll note as we go through, it's going to vary when we look at how we do it for retail space versus commercial space versus hospitality as we go throughout the study. But basically, the first step in this process was to generate estimates of what we think on the site, how many people would actually be employed, how much we'd actually pay in income, and how much we actually think would happen in terms of sales, economic activity, and revenue. Now, in a typical economic impact study, once we get those direct numbers of the actual employment, et cetera, the next thing we want to do, and we use a process called input-output analysis, we have a special data set that maps the relationships of the actual data in Brown County across every single industry in our region. And what we do then is we look at, once those direct effects happen, how do they multiply through the rest of the regional economy? When we say multiply, what we're really talking about is, and I'll use this example I used this morning, suppose we have a little coffee shop in our parcel, and let's just hypothetically say the coffee shop kicks off $1 million a year in revenue. That's how much it brings in. Let's say it employs 15 people, a couple managers, and some part-time workers. Because that coffee shop exists in our region, that coffee shop is going to spend money other places in Brown County for services, for food, for whatever they need to run their business. As they spend money in the economy, that helps other businesses stay open, employ people, etc. Additionally, that coffee shop employs 12 people, and those 12 people actually have income that they then spend in our backyard and local economy. So the fact that the coffee shop is there and exists also creates multiplier effects to the rest of the economy as people make income and as the firm spends money, this multiplies. We call it the multiplier effect. There's two different parts of it. We call it the indirect and induced effect. Combined, those represent that extra income as well as that extra spending by the original business. So when we do these studies, what I really like to report, what I like to talk about, and what I'll highlight today is what is sort of the direct impact, i.e., how many people do we think physically would work on this site, physically be paid, and how much would it generate activity? And then I'll talk about what is the total impact on Brown County when we account for the multiplying that happens because that original site exists. So that's the general gist of the first part of the economic impact study. So what I'm going to do then for the next 10 minutes or so is walk through each one of the categories that we analyzed, the retail space, the commercial space, hospitality space, and some of the residential properties, and walk through some of the results that we found in our study. Before I do that, I'll just drop the punchline, the headline result right here, is if we look at the total economic impact of this particular conceptual plan that was drafted, the potential annual total impacts on Brown County. This could represent 1,463 jobs in Brown County, about $59.3 million in labor income, at about $138.5 million in economic activity, which is a sizable amount of money when you think about areas, when you think about our region. So this site has tremendous potential to impact our local economy. So to get into some of the nuts and bolts of where these numbers came from, I want to walk through each one of these categories, specifically in the retail space. So the first thing we did when assessing retail is we took all of the different things that were in that study and we tried to map them to comparable things that currently exist. And once we mapped them to comparable things, we created estimates of what the sales per square foot effectively are for each one of those entities. So to give you an idea, so for example, the coffee shop, we collect the data on Dunkin' Donuts and Starbucks, how much they actually generated revenue per square foot. We got an estimate of what that average would be, and then we applied it to our coffee shop, which was however many square feet it was, and that created an estimate of what we think this coffee shop would generate if it existed today. So if you go through, you probably can't see all this, but we tried to find comparable things. So the brewery and distillery, we found data on Granite City Brewing Company, and we used that as the comparable. For the restaurants that were limited service restaurants, we used data from Noodles, Potbellies, and Qdoba. For our more full-service restaurants, we have data on Applebee's, Buffalo Wild Wings, Olive Garden, and Robin, and we use those averages to build out our estimates. So I'm not going to go through every one because we'd be here literally all night if I did this for the entire study. There's a lot here, but that's the general gist of how we approached it. The other thing I will mention, because it shows up a lot, is we didn't go as specific as to say what kind of retail store was going to be in every single location, because there's a number of stores that would be difficult to do that. So the data we used for that was from the International Council of Shopping Centers. They classified a shopping facility of this size as what they call a neighborhood center. That's what it's actually called in their language. And they provided estimates for the Wisconsin Congressional District Number 8 of what a typical neighborhood center in this region actually does in terms of sales per square foot. And we use that for those estimates. So if we use this data, we can take a look at actually mapping out what the estimates were. So here's all the things that were sort of in the retail space in this study, and here's exactly how big they were. And these were the actual estimates of sales per square foot for every single one of those entities. Now, before we got the estimated sales, we also took into account the fact that there is vacancy in any retail establishment. There's a vacancy rate, there's an occupancy rate. So we also applied an occupancy rate of about 93.22%, which is the average from the ICSC for our area, and then apply that to give you estimated sales for every single entity within the retail space in our study. Now, if you add those up, it comes out to be, if you go to the next slide, it comes out to be about $29 million in sales, and just retail sales is the estimate that this could potentially kick off. In the retail space, if we're talking about $29 million in sales, typically in Brown County, that number of sales would represent about 468 jobs. Keep in mind, these are full-time and part-time jobs, so we're not making the distinction. So a lot of those are probably part-time jobs in the retail space, and probably pay out about $10.5 million in labor income. Now, this first row is how many people would actually work, actually get paid, and the actual sales we think would come off of this site. So what we did then is we did our analysis and accounted for the multiplier effects, and that suggested from the retail space alone here about 607 jobs, about $17 million in labor income, and nearly $50 million in output just from sort of the retail side of our story. And this includes both the restaurants as well as the general retail space. So if we shift then from that, the next area to talk about is the commercial tenant operation. This is a particularly tricky thing to look at because we can say that we have 108,000 square feet of office space, and we can say there's people working there. But the next challenge is to figure out what kind of business is going to be there, because different kinds of businesses in different industries are going to have different employment, sales, revenue, etc. So what we did to sort of approach getting an estimate for the office space operation, we used something called SOC code, Standard Occupation Codes. It's something by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. What they actually do is they take every job, arguably every job in the United States, and they classify it into one of different types of jobs. And I say types of jobs because what we're talking about here is types of jobs in terms of occupations. So they have 23 major occupation codes, if you will. 11 of them are actually sort of deemed to be office-style occupations. So what we did is we pulled out the data for Brown County specifically, and we pulled out all of the office space occupations to get a sense for what percentage of our office workers in Brown County fall in these different types of occupations. So if we do that, the first column here is the percent of office workers that are in Brown County that do different kinds of office-oriented occupations. So we see office administrative support is our largest percent of our office workers. That seems kind of obvious given the title of it, about 30%. Next, we have sales and related occupations, another 17.5%. All the way down the list, you know, architecture, engineering, 3.1%. So this is the actual data for our distribution of office workers in Brown County. So then what we did is we tried to get a sense for how much office space then of the 108,000 square feet we have, if this is the distribution of what different workers are doing in different occupations, we overlaid this distribution on our available office space. So, for example, we have 108,000 square feet of office space, and 30% of that gives us about 33,000 square feet dedicated specifically to, in this case, office administration. So the first thing we did is really just allocate what is this office space going to be functionally doing for different types of fields. The next thing we did is trying to take into account vacancy rates again. We collected some data, and the estimate was about, the national average about 87% occupancy rate for commercial office space. So we applied that, assuming there'll be turnover, offices might not be fully active the whole time. We applied that to get our next projection. But again, this is still just square feet. We have to convert that into jobs, into something. National data suggests from CoStar Portfolio Strategy, they're a very large commercial real estate investment research company. They estimated that the in 2017, basically need about 181 square feet of space per every office worker. So if you use that estimate of you need about 181 square feet for every office worker you have, all you had to do then, or all we had to do then, was basically figure out how many office workers can fit in that space, and that would represent how many jobs could effectively fit in this potential space that we don't exactly know what everything's going to be. So once we apply that, we have a reasonable idea of what kinds of fields a lot of these are going to fall into, and that gives us a distribution that this space could probably accommodate about 520 jobs altogether in the commercial office space. That's what we think physically could work in there, accounting for occupancy, as well as the different types of jobs that we could have. So if we use that as our sort of our direct effect number, what we see is, think about 520 jobs, about 520 jobs across the different industries. Our software suggests that companies like that in Brown County kick off about $47 million in terms of sales or revenue in a given year. If we run that through the multiplier effects, commercial office space here likely is going to have an impact on the Brown County region of about 787 jobs, about $40 million in labor income, and about $83 million in economic activity. So if you notice, we said sort of the total impact of this entire thing is probably about 1,400 or so jobs. We already have about 600 coming from the retail space, another 700, almost 800 here coming from the commercial space, which is going to be the bulk, not surprising, the bulk of where the jobs are going to be coming from, which makes reasonable sense. So the next thing to touch on briefly is the housing side. I say briefly because in the grand scheme of things, this is not going to add a lot to our jobs numbers, but we have a good amount of residential real estate in here. We have apartment building. Apartment buildings likely to have a property manager, someone that oversees the property. We have a bunch of townhouses, condos. We made the assumption, because we had to make assumptions, but we made the assumption that the apartment was going to be a rental facility and all the other real estate was going to be owner-occupied. But even if it's owner-occupied, you might pay HOA fees or something like that, so there's going to be some maintenance jobs and stuff like that. When we went through and accounted for all of that in our study, and there's a little bit behind that, I'm not going to go into details here, basically marginal impact, probably about six more jobs in our area as a result of that, about 1 million output, probably adding about 10 jobs to our total analysis. But this is all really just looking at some property managers, stuff like that in the space. The real value of this property part is going to be when you talk about the valuation and potential tax ramifications, etc. So the last thing then for us to look at was the hospitality side. This is where we had to get a little creative in terms of finding comparables, because a lot of the stuff in here is a little bit unique. So we have a performance amphitheater for a second. Probably has a lot of public events, maybe a couple private events. We got to put a value on that. We have the event rotunda within the GBCI space. We have another event banquet facility potentially by the river. A lot of that data is not exactly easy to get some national statistics on, so we went more local with our analysis. So a lot of what you're seeing on this page is us contacting a couple of local comparable properties. Some of them asked to remain confidential because they shared their confidential data with me. Two of them were a comparable venue in our area that happens to have some concerts in a space like that, and they shared some of their revenue estimates with me that are projected based on the number of seats that we could hold in our performance amphitheater. Gazebo, the Village Ally provided some of their parks data on revenue for gazebo space right now, where we get some of those numbers from. The outdoor event plaza, that one was kind of fun, because that's a plaza where you could have farmers markets, car shows, etc., so we had to put a value on that. So we actually did collect, I found a couple of previous studies from the New Leaf Winter Farmers Market from a couple years ago and the Fond du Lac Farmers Market, and got some comparable numbers that were studies were pretty close as annual sales generated from this, so we used that as a basis for that. The hotel, I was able to have a local hotel share some of their private data with us to get an estimate of square footage for them. And I think that's all the big ones. Yeah, I think it's everything here. So if we then look at adding that up, what we just said in terms of output, jobs, directly employed about 46 people, about 2.3 million in output, grand total of 59 jobs, and 4 million in output with the multiplier effects here. Okay, so if we add all that stuff together from those areas that we just looked at specifically, this is where we get the headline numbers that we're talking about. Our study estimates that this actual site will employ about 1,040 people. Directly, another 40 million in labor income is going to be paid to these people, and about 80 million output just on the physical site. When we apply the multiplier effects to our local economy in Brown County, we're estimating a total effect of about 1,463 jobs, 60 million or so in labor income, and the 138.5 coming in terms of economic activity. And again, the bulk of this, if you look at the different categories, the bulk of this is coming from the commercial space at the 787 and the retail space combined at about another 607 jobs. So the thing I want to stress right now is these numbers we're presenting represent annual impact. So this is on an annual basis every year. We would expect this many people to be employed, this much to be kicked off in labor income, and this much to be kicked off in terms of actual output for the region. So that's an annual effect, which is a really, really valuable thing to our local area. The other thing I want to stress right now, because it's a good point to mention it, when you look at an economic impact study of something of this nature, there's really two different economic impact effects you can talk about. The first is the annual operations. The other is the economic impact from construction. So a site like this is going to take years and years of construction. There's going to be a ton of construction jobs kicked off of this. Our study did not focus on that side. The construction cost of a hypothetical plan like this, the estimate to get those estimates would be very, very costly and very, very complicated. So we did not do that part of the study. We just looked at the annual economic impacts. But again, if this takes 10 years to build, you can imagine 10 years of construction workers and anybody in the field having jobs and things to do on a regular basis over a decade. So this study doesn't even account for those particular things. So this is the first sort of key result of the study, is looking at that annual economic impact. The next thing we actually spent our time looking at, and this is probably the tricky part, is the property valuation side. So we actually did have a conversation with several local property developers about different approaches. If they were to approach this, how would they do it to get their take? A lot of property developers suggested just go out and find, do some market comps of different real estate, but like it's really tricky when you're talking about making a comp for the GBCI building itself. There's not an easy comp that we can point to for that. So we had to get a little bit more creative. Another common approach that a lot of developers use is something called capitalization rates. All this is really trying to do is figure out if there's a building, how much does the owner of the building expect to get in net operating income? How much do they think to make off of that site on a regular basis? And if you take that as a ratio of the property value, you get this thing called capitalization rate. So a lot of developers will look at these numbers when investing and use that as a basis for how much money they think they could make off the property. So that's a typical capitalization rate approach. However, our problem, of course, is what we actually want to know is what is the potential property valuation. So what we did is we actually spoke with some developers, we did some research, and we got a good sense in the current market of some capitalization rates, but these are very specific to every location. So what we did is we got a couple capitalization rates that make sense for our area, and we basically did a spread of high and low estimates of potential cap rates that could exist, that seem reasonable. The other thing we also did is net operating income, another tricky thing to assess because it's going to vary by every single individual property. We have some good data for our region, and the data we have from, it's called IREM, the Institute for Real Estate Management, they actually gave us estimates of low-end, median, and high-end income amounts for different kinds of property. So what we ended up doing for this is we actually took, we have a table here of essentially nine different scenarios. The first scenario is a scenario with a high cap rate. The last scenario is basically lower cap rates. And here is low operating income, and here is high operating income. What it really means for us, though, is we wanted to get a sense for, in maybe some extreme cases, what could this maybe be on the low end, what it could be on the high end. Of course, this is all dependent upon what finally ends up being put there and the quality in terms of high end, median, and whatever ends up being in the study. So when we take a look at doing that, for every single thing that we just talked about in the study that would be a privately owned sort of taxable entity, our estimates came out on the low end of this very specific conceptual plan of about $46.7 million, but that's on the low end. In the median, about $58.8 million valuation, and on the high end, about $71 million in new property valuation. Now, of course, the reason why this is important for the local municipalities is potential property tax revenue that can kick off. That currently, there's nothing kicked off because it's a state-owned parcel of land. Okay? So this is sort of the first pass estimate at property valuation, but we're going to do something else a little bit more complicated in a second. Before we get to the more complicated thing, the potential property tax kickoff from this analysis, using the 2017 mill rate and using the same table we just looked at, we did an estimate of how much might be generated for local government from these different property valuation specifications. So we can see all these numbers coming off of the previous table. To be conservative, if we use sort of this median estimate of about $58.8 million, sort of our median number around that range, you're showing a potential tax revenue kickoff, and this is all going to be new tax revenue that does not exist, about $1.1 to $1.4 million, depending if it's a higher value property, maybe as high as $1.5 million. Again, this is assuming the conceptual plan we're talking about is the exact conceptual plan that is built, constructed to those specifications. However, the other thing we wanted to do, and Brad and Jim and I had several conversations about this, and I had several local economic developers look at the plan and say that it's a phenomenal plan. It does a good job of creating some really good community spaces, but you could make some changes to the plan that would change the valuation. So after speaking to a developer and talking with Brad and Jim, we wanted to sort of highlight the fact that the property valuation piece is very, very sensitive to what you're actually putting on the property. Changes to the plan change the property valuation. To just show that as an example, we did two different tweaks or alterations to the plan to see what would happen to property values. The final one I'm going to show you is taking our original conceptual plan and just adding a single floor to every residential building in there and the three corporate office buildings. And putting, rather than two duplexes in the river, putting a high-end luxury condo development. So we just added a floor to everything, which raised the density. We got more space in commercial residential real estate. If you were to do that and then redo the exact property analysis that we looked at, our low-end estimate jumps to about $66 million, and our very high-end estimate jumps to about $100.6 million, just by changing the density a little bit on this property by adding more floors to the existing buildings. So again, the whole reason that we wanted to do this was just to highlight that there is a tremendous amount of upside potential with what could be there based on what the vision, based on what the stakeholders think could be a really good thing to fit in that space. And the property valuation is going to fluctuate heavily based on what is ultimately put in that property. So having a $100 million property valuation is not out of the stretch of imagination at all, depending on what's put on this parcel. It's definitely something that's achievable, depending on the final specification. A couple other things, just to throw some other pieces of information out there in this study, and there is a little more than that too, but the other thing we did, just as a matter of perspective, again, the challenge with a lot of what we're talking about is this whole plan is hypothetical in nature. So everything we've talked about so far did estimates of if this thing existed today, this would be what it would be in current dollars. This is all those current dollar numbers. As a matter of context, policymakers always ask these questions. Let's say this didn't exist today. Let's say this existed in 10 years, for example. What would be the valuation in 10 years? So all that is, as an economist, is just adjusting for some assumption of a change in prices over time. So if we wanted to have a conversation about, well, what if this existed in 2028 and it took 10 years to build this? What could be the potential economic impact in 10 years? So we took a very standard assumption is a 2% annual inflation rate. So if we take all the results that we just talked about and adjust them, compound them over time, over 10 years, growing at a 2% rate, if we were to do that, those economic impact numbers that we talked about, you're still going to have roughly the same number of jobs because the number of bodies didn't change. But the income's going to jump to about $72 million, and that $138.5 million number we talked about before would actually probably be closer to $168, $170 million in 10 years from now. If you take our core property valuation numbers at a high number, about $71 million, we would estimate that to be about $86 million under the exact same scenario for 10 years in the future with a 2% annual inflation rate. So just to reiterate a couple of the key takeaways then of this study. The first is that annual impact. We think it would employ about 1,000 people, kick off about $39, $40 million in income, $80 million output. And this is the big number. If you turn on the news at all tonight from the press conference, this has been on the news. I've seen it three times already today. They're highlighting this number because this is the big number to talk about. About 1,463 jobs, $59 million in income, about $138 million in output. Again, that is annual. Every single year we're talking about that kickoff. If you want to talk about property valuation, this particular plan, median estimate about $58, $60 million, about $70 million, $70 million in the high end, kicking off just in property tax valuation, $1.1 and $1.4 million. The other thing, and I kind of breezed over this in the first part of the study, the other thing to think about is if we build a new a site that has a lot of retail establishments, there's going to be sales implications in terms of sales tax. Based on the site, about $49.8 million coming off of that sales space, with $4.2 million in hospitality sales. Put that together, about a 5.5% sales tax rate. About another $3 million, give or take, is going to be generated just in sales tax revenue. Now, be careful, because one of the challenges of this study is I can't say that all of that is completely brand new. There might be other retail establishments in our area that currently exist, and people might shop at this one versus that one. So we can't claim there's $3 million in new sales. I'd venture to say a portion of that's probably going to be new, but some of it might be substituted from other parts in our area. Which is just a quick thing on the retail sales tax space. And then the last thing is highlighting the fact that the site has tremendous upside potential depending on what you ultimately put there. A slight tweak to our plan raises the potential property tax valuation from $71 to $100 million, give or take, and just the inflation numbers that adjust at the end of that. So that's sort of the quick overview. Maybe it felt a lot longer because I'm an economist, and I apologize. But that's the quick overview of what the study actually tried to look at and what we tried to pull out of it. There's a lot of detail under the hood. I tried to give you guys a good sense of it. I'm happy to answer any questions if we're doing a Q&A or something or whatever you guys want to do.
Board members, any questions?
Sure. If you could build on that last part about reshuffling the cards or cannibalizing existing sales.
Yep.
Did you say that's factored in, that it's not all going to be, or you don't bring that component because it's hard to estimate?
That's a phenomenal question. So this is the challenge with any economic impact study in general. If we had more time and had a lot more specifics about what was going to be there, if you wanted to get a sense for what that substitution effect would be, you probably have to do some market research, survey the local population, ask them some questions about if they would change their behavior based on this. What this study does is just say, if this existed today, here's the total number of jobs it could represent in Brown County. It does not make a distinction between brand new jobs coming in that don't exist, only because it's hard to get a sense for what the actual substitution really would be without having a lot more specific information, and most likely a lot of survey information, which is the challenge with any of these economic impact studies, is saying how much of it truly is going to be new versus shuffling within Brown County. Now, to be fair, a portion of it will be new. It's just really difficult for me to right now sit here and say, oh, well, of those 1,400 jobs, 10% of them are new. We don't have any good numbers to make a good claim at that at this point, because, again, there's 20 retail stores. We didn't really say we're going to have a GNC and we're going to have a this store and a that store. So it's difficult to say that ahead of time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's not that I'm skeptical, but if you have a citizen or a business owner, it's just, you know, reshuffling the same thing. You know, I would argue that this is different because of Door County traffic or the Packers, or, you know, that this may get a pretty strong outside component. But I understand this. You can't speculate on that where we are right now. But it's a decent possibility.
Absolutely. And you brought up a really good point. A lot of times what we'll try and what we like to see, and I think this establishment would do it, any kind of economic impact study like this, what you really like to see is more money coming in from outside your region and less money from within your region going outside of your region. So if anything, I would make the case that a site like this that would have all these amenities in one place is more likely to capture people, like you just said, maybe traveling to a county or something, that would stop in from outside of Brown County, stopping by this facility to spend some money or check out whatever's in there and hang out there. This site has potential to bring in more of that outside money.
Or keep people here
who might go somewhere else. Absolutely. But again, it's really difficult to speculate, especially with a massive mixed-use development like this, exactly what that would look like, given how hypothetical it is.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
It's a great question.
Do we have any other great questions?
Because you let me off the hook easy. I like it.
Dr. Schaefer's been talking about this for a long time, and while many of us spend our summer up at our cottages or just enjoying the good weather, Dr. Schaefer spent his summer doing this. So we'd like to thank you very much for everything you did. You did a beautiful job. And for those of you who might want to know where this project goes next, we put it together with the great view of or vision for what that can be. We put it together with the study, and Representative Stephan and Senator Coles deliver that to Madison and start the job down there. So they can. Our goal with all of this was simply to say, we know there are many safety issues with the prison. We know there are many fiscal issues with the prison itself. We wanted to add the local flavor, saying if you choose to close GBCI, we're ready. And we're ready because we have a vision, we've accepted input from folks, and we've actually gone out and spent the time to build a vision and then say this is what it could be worth. And as Dr. Schaefer said, it's kind of different to be doing an economic impact study on something that doesn't exist. But I think it's going to help our legislators an awful lot when they're saying, okay, if we close it, is it going to become a barren wasteland? I think the answer is obvious, and it's not. The expense or the response that we've gotten has been overwhelming. From a local perspective, if on the high end, we're realizing $100 million in property value, Village of Alloy looks to get approximately $750,000 every year in new property tax revenue. A couple of years ago, we were given a check for something around $750,000 with the stadium tax refund, and that was called once-in-a-lifetime gift. Well, we can find a gift that keeps on giving. So if you like what you see, let your legislators know, share the word, and keep your fingers crossed. Any other comments or thoughts, folks? Okay. Thank you very much, Mark. It's been a pleasure working with you, and look forward to a lot more of it. Okay. We'll move on to item number 5. Is there anyone in the audience this evening that would like to speak on something that is not on this evening's agenda? Gentlemen.
Good evening.
Good evening. Could you give us your name and address, please?
Kevin Kramer, 2682 Green Isle Court, District 6. I got three little things that I wish to bring up. First of all, I would like to see a stop sign or a yield sign on Simonette and Greenwald, because I was coming down Simonette with my wife on a motorcycle, and a mailman almost took me out coming across Greenwald. Okay. So it seems like kind of a safety issue, not just for me, but a lot of residents around in that neighborhood, and there's a lot of kids in that area. Number two, if this has been brought up as old business, I apologize. But if it has, however, then it's maybe become more of a concern for the residents of Alloways. And that's probably more of a, like a, what's it called? An engine braking sign as you come into Alloways, into off of 172. I don't know. Obviously, it has been brought up several times.
Can I give you a hug?
I mean, I went over there. My neighbors live down the road there, and it's, we grill out, and all of a sudden, we hear this, ba 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 ba. I was like, oh, boy. I said, has anybody gone to these meetings and brought this up? So that's my second one. And my third one is, when you send this informational packet to Madison, are you going to include, amendments for licenses, or does the Village of Alloway have enough licenses, as in a beer license or a liquor license? Because I know at the state you're landlocked. You're pretty much determined by the state on how many licenses you're allowed, unless we do something like Ashwaubenon has done. Right. Because if somebody brings in, say, maybe a Dave and Buster's in that area, mm-hmm. I mean, are they going to have the, go through a lot of licensing issues with that format? And that's all I have.
Well, that's a good question, Kevin. Thank you. I have a question about the engine braking. How often do you hear that?
Oh, it's quite a bit.
Is it?
Especially when I go over there, pretty much every weekend to see the buddies and that.
Yeah.
But, I know it's going to be pretty much impossible in force, but for a visual deterrent, I said, how much can it be? $500 for a visual deterrent?
Yeah.
I mean, it can't be, to me, it's a drop in a bucket,
And you have people who agree with you. We did look into that, and the state is not willing at this point to put anything up about no engine braking or anything like that. And our director of public works looked into that, right?
I think Brad did.
Brad did? I'm sorry. Our village administrator looked into that. Brad, what did they say?
Since they call it the freeway, signs like this are not permitted. That was the answer I got. Now, did we push the issue? No. It was more or less just trying to find out a little bit about what is the potential. I know some other suggestions would be to lower the speed limit further out, because all of a sudden you're going from that 70 by 80 to a 55 mile an hour speed limit.
Well, that's a good
idea. If that is able to be pushed out a little bit farther, would that...
That's actually a great idea.
So that's an opportunity for further investigation and discussion.
And I think one of the topics, when Sean said he was going to invite that individual from the state to come in, to address us regarding the 172 and Riverside Drive, that was on my agenda to speak to him about that as well.
I did reach out to and he cannot make a meeting at 6:30, but he said anytime between 8 and 2:30 next week would work for him. know on my agenda to send all of you an email and find out what time is what best for everyone.
Okay. But we will we'll continue that conversation, and as you may or may not know, but we're learning when dealing with the state, the folks that tell us these things, that's what they're told. And so you have to continue raising the level of discussion until you can get someone to someone who can actually make the decision.
Great.
And so we can certainly continue that discussion as Trustee Atwood would very much agree with you.
My right hand man.
I hear it daily as well. So, and I've heard other complaints about it. So.
Trustee Harris.
In terms of having the gentleman, I believe you said his name was Randy, coming, I think it's important enough that we don't necessarily need to have him come next week at an 8 to 2:30 time frame. I think we'd be willing to have him, if he needs to push it out until the end of September or even the first meeting in October, for him to attend an evening meeting, a public meeting, that would probably be beneficial.
And if he can't, tell him to send his boss. And in terms of liquor license, that's a good question. We do have liquor licenses. It depends what goes in there, that sort of thing. And regarding the stop sign on Simonette and Greenwald, we can have staff take a look at that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for coming.
Yeah.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak? Yes, sir.
How you doing? Andy Fisher, 745 Simonette, 15-year resident, first-time board member.
Thank you for joining us.
I want to second what Kevin said about, I live right on the end of Simonette, so when he talks about the stop signs on Greenwald, and there's one on Regina and Simonette as well, there's no stop signs, but there's a million kids down there, and there's been a lot of close, I know better because I've been living there for 15 years, but, you know, there are people who whip around the corner, they don't see a stop sign, yield sign, anything, it's just, so. And then the engine braking again, right on the end of Simonette, so I hear that as well.
I'm going to give him one hug.
But what I'm here for is quarter four sometime in 2017, I want to say November, somewhere around that time frame, there was a water main break on the corner of Simonette and Regina. Construction crew came out there, they fixed it up real quick, filled it up, put some of them construction easels right in the middle of the road, and it's been there ever since. So this was quarter four of 2017, so almost a year later, the easels are still there, the road hasn't been fixed, half of the road is, you kind of got to drive around it every time, you know. Every time I'm down there. So I just want to come and raise it up and make sure this is the right forum to bring it up. And if it is there a process that's done? You know, maybe a 2018 budget. I don't know what it is, but I figured I'd just at least come and talk to you guys about it.
Thank you. So that's right at the corner of Simonette and Regina?
Yep. It's right on the Simonette side.
Okay. We can have our Director of Public Works look into that.
Okay.
He's writing it down right now.
Okay.
We do have a street repair project. It just started, so
is that where it would fall under?
Yes.
Okay. It's just been there for so long that I figured, you know what, I want to come here and just kind of bring it up and see what the actual process is to fix it.
Good. I'll brought it up. I will follow up with one of our engineers.
What's your name?
Sean Jean.
Sean Jean. Okay. Thanks. Appreciate it, everyone.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks for coming here. Is there anyone else who would like to speak this evening on something that is not on this evening's agenda?
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood. I'm the former co-chairman of the Village of Galloway Bike Ped Committee. That presentation was great, showed a lot of potential for the Village of Galloway. I think it's important that we recognize that we're currently spending money to do a complete commercial zoning code rewrite, as well as residential. And we never finished the corridor study. It was only halfway done. So what I'm suggesting is that we take a look at this great data and we finish what's currently on our plate, that we develop our waterfront along the corridor on the west side of West St. Joseph Street, that we put in the office buildings, that we give the incentives to the developers. The Village of Galloway should not be buying the property They should be giving the tax incentives to the developers, saying this is what we'd like to see. Work with them now so that they don't, that it doesn't take 2 or 3 years for them to get a shovel in the ground, that they can go ahead and do it. I know that Somerville's been talking about putting up a new building for quite a while. The DNR property across from the prison is ready to go right now. All it needs is the correct zoning and a little bit of push from the governor, and you know, somebody could buy that property and get this project started without having to wait, you know, 5 or 10 years for the redevelopment of the prison. Thanks.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on something that's not on this evening's agenda? Hearing none, we will close public appearances and move on to old business action item number 6, developers agreement for 1649 South Webster Avenue. It's been a long time coming. A lot of work. Mr. Lang.
Yes, I did place on your in front of you earlier the email I received from John DeLeers that is acceptable to what is in the developer's agreement, with a couple of amendments or suggested changes. Number one, he's asking if in the addition of the words retail or professional offices, office for the property versus including the restaurant, in the event he does not get a restaurant to go into the under the site, that he could still rent it out as either an office or retail. And I guess that was the biggest concern that or question he had. As you indicated, we've been working on this developer agreement for quite some time, and the biggest challenge has been that filling that extra space, whether it's a restaurant, or now office or rent or retail. Mr. DeLeers has been working diligently to try to find a restaurant, and he is willing to move forward without having a defined restaurant at this time. Thus, therefore, the change to that verbiage of allowing the retail or office. Okay. The red line version that you do have in front of you, Mr. DeLeers did read through it. Again, had no other comments. The clean version would then go back to the attorney and then thus to Mr. DeLeers for signature. I also gave you an email from Mr. DeLeers indicating, sorry, that's on the papers here. Oh, because the property itself is also included in the developer's agreement, that he has no issues with the purchase of the property either, we're looking at as a dollar. The agreement of the village participating at a capped rate for the environmental cleanup. That does not seem to be an issue by any stretch of the imagination. And or the other aspect that you did bring up is that he is no longer going to have additional investors. It's himself funding the project. And the question of him bringing forward proof of his finances was still has not been done yet, so that's all contingent as well. But our attorney has reviewed all of this, including the purchase, and is comfortable with where we're at.
Brad, the...
I'm sorry, I did miss one thing. Trevor and I were talking that within the developer's agreement, there should be an agreement for a central garbage collection, and it should be part of the entire agreement, so that if 10 years down the road, 12 years down the road, whatever the case may be, whose garbage, who's paying for it, who, you know, where is it located, so that you don't have multiple locations. So we want to include that as well.
Okay. So the name of the company that he's operating under a 1649 South Webster LLC.
Correct.
In his email, he says, in section 302C, there are notes about the developer applying for grants to offset the property cost. In order to do this, he would need to outsource that, and there are no funds for that.
That's the grant that we're already working on?
Yeah.
So I explained that to Mr. Delivers, and he was fine with that. So he understood that he is not responsible for that. That's something that we are applying for, and thus would, if awarded the $250,000 grant, could be going towards the project.
Okay, so did we take that out of 302C then?
It has not been taken out at this point, but it will be.
Okay. Okay, for the folks in the audience, this is the old Village Hall property that we've been talking about for several years and several opportunities, and the latest was Zambaldi Beer was going to go on there, and Delirious Construction came along and said, Zambaldi will help. We'll build the building, lease it back to them, I'm assuming. And we'll also build another 5,000 square foot onto that building to allow for, at the time, the idea was a restaurant. And now they're saying it could be a restaurant. It could also be retail or professional offices. Correct?
Correct. Okay. President Rector, I think it's important to also note that within the developer's agreement, if it is a restaurant, there is no drive-through.
Okay.
Because we didn't want that to be a burden on the neighborhood as well.
Are there any questions for Brad on this?
Staff or attorney concerns, village attorney concerns, we're good with everything else at this point?
So far, everything's okay.
Trustee Harris?
In terms of the grants, would they be submitted under the developer's name or under the Village of Alloway's name?
It's under the developer's name, if I'm mistaken, correct, Trevor? Mm-hmm. And the only way to apply for that grant is to have a signed developer's agreement in place. So.
Okay. Thank you.
If you recall, there was the grant for the environmental cleanup that we were working to secure, and we are no longer eligible for that because they are considering us a viable causer, and therefore have the means to take care of the problem. But this is a different grant that's available that can go towards construction, which then could offset our contribution.
Thank you.
Trustee Dirt.
I see that we have June Costo and August in here, but now we have to jump ahead to September.
But we're getting there.
Yep.
We had discussed the proof of funds to go into this.
Excuse me?
We had discussed the proof of funds for the developer, and is that included in this?
He still needs to provide that to us. Mr. Villiers has been on town several days, and you know, we're emailing back and forth today, but he has no problem doing that.
Okay. Villiers has a great name in the community, but we just have to make sure we're protecting our folks. And then in terms of the cleanup, as many of you know, the old Village Hall site is contaminated, and we have agreed to clean that up for the developer to a maximum amount of $800,000, and then any grant that comes back to us to lessen that number. But it's something, we did it, we have to clean it up if we want some to come in. At least that's the consensus at this point in time. Are there any other questions for Brad? I will then entertain a motion on this item. Trustee Genrich.
I would move to approve the developer's agreement given the changes brought forward earlier this evening.
Could we add contingent on us receiving the proof of funds?
Correct, yes.
I would second that.
Seconded by Trustee Atwood. Any discussion? Trustee Harris?
I'm not sure I'm 100% comfortable with the addition of the retail and professional office phrasing. The discussions we've had for the last X amount of period of time have been brewery, restaurant, one that they fit together well. I'd be more than willing to see if a suitable restaurant can't be found to discuss switching it to retail or professional office down the road, but it's not something we've been discussing for this location up until the last 5-10 minutes. So I'm not sure if I'm 100% comfortable with that specific switch yet.
Okay. Yeah, with them sharing parking, professional office makes much more sense than retail with peak times for both in the evenings.
Brent, did you want to say something?
Yes, I just wanted to share that Mr. Delirs is actively working on 3 different restaurants that he felt would be suitable for that site. And that's the other thing he's looking at, something that would be suitable for the site as well.
And this is really more insurance that if he can't get that, the whole project wouldn't stop.
Correct.
Okay, great.
Would there be a way to limit it to professional office? Because we were talking about the hours of, seems like the hours are more to where they can share parking and much more conducive than a retail would be, just a thought.
Or is it possible to some way have them focus on restaurants, and if after some period of time he's not successful in doing so, then we would revisit the retail and or professional, or professional and or retail at that point in time, and we wouldn't unreasonably withhold that request. Do you think he... Well, you don't know if he'd be open to that.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Sounds like he wants to put it in a restaurant. He knows that makes sense. But he also doesn't want to be sitting with a half-empty building for a long time. So...
As you can recall, the developer's room does call out his minimum property taxes that he will be paying annually.
Yeah. And I think to Trustee Harris's point, you know, taxes are a given, but then what's going to go in there and complement that sector? I hate to send it back and then send it back again. Do you have a proposed amendment to that?
Well, it's not that I think something, for lack of better words, inappropriate would go there. It's just that's been our discussion.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like the idea that where I said down the road, and I don't know, 6 months, 9 months, a year, then we would switch. I don't know what is a realistic and reasonable amount of time to try to secure a specific type of establishment.
I don't think
I'm trying to make it more difficult. It's coming to us at the last minute.
Right.
I want to make sure we're thinking it through correctly so that we don't look back 2 years from now and wish we would have done something a little bit different.
To your point, I would somewhat agree. I think Mr. Delirs has already expressed an interest of putting a restaurant there. I think he's discussed negotiations with 3 other restaurants to go in there, so I think the desire is there. If you wanted to amend that, I would maybe suggest amend it to if a restaurant doesn't come through final approval on commercial or retail business, would have to be approved by the board type of. I mean, I don't want to prevent or slow down getting a shovel in the ground here. We've held on to this for a long time. We've got somebody that's hot, interested, and ready to go. I say we don't hold it up for how many square feet is this? Of just the restaurant part?
5,000.
Yeah, 5,000. I'd like to see it moving forward and at least give them the benefit of the doubt that a restaurant's going to go in there. That'd be my recommendation, not an amendment.
I understand.
And I would reiterate that to a point that I don't think we want to handcuff him anymore at this point. You know, we've been diddling around with this forever. we're close enough that I think we have to have a bit of faith in the process that this is really what he wants to do. So let's give him the chance to do it and get this approved.
Would he typically, in our process, if he were to build a building and not have any tenants, would he come to us for approval on types of businesses? But because we're funding it, we can say the type of businesses that we're interested in. I like Trustee Atwood's approach, saying, you know, come to us, just like they did with a restaurant, right? They didn't name the restaurant, but they told us in general terms what it was or what kind it was. And maybe the same kind of discussion. We surely don't want to hamstring him or hold him back. We want him to be successful.
I think just reiterating the fact of being transparent in what you're looking at putting in there,
yep,
and having that discussion, I think would be very beneficial. And you know, kind of going back to the desire for restaurant, I think is true. And if, you know, to maybe a little bit of Trustee Harris, in the event after 6 months during construction, because that's what they're going to be doing, they're going to be building it out.
Yeah.
The restaurant that's coming in, if it is a restaurant, the finish will come after the fact. So the shell will be there. That's going to give some time. It's not going to be built in the next few months. It's going to take quite a few months. So in that process, if he can demonstrate the fact that, finding a restaurant is just not working out, this is my alternative, and has a parameter or a little bit of a guideline from us, saying, yeah, we'd like to see the professional office type aspect. And then he has to have to bring in that to us.
So just so I'm clear, a follow-up to your question, does the village get a second kick at this when you do arrive at the time where maybe you can't get a restaurant? From what you just said, the shell, as his original plans for a restaurant, easily convert that to office space, or what would be the process if they say we want a different footprint or go off a story or do something different? When you say we, do we have the ability, does he have a need to come back? I think that question was asked before, but I'm still having trouble.
The plan that they have brought forth for preliminary approval is a single story, 5,000 square foot, and the anticipation of a restaurant, which would have been built out. So the shell, I think, is what's going to be in place, and then his hopes are that it's either a restaurant, and if that fails, then it would be
a single story, 5,000 foot, yeah, office.
Correct.
And he could do that. If we pass this without the amendments, without an amendment, he could do that a month from now or 6 months from now if he decides that's the way to go or can't find a restaurant. There is no planning commission or code or
the final approval has not been is not gained final approval on his development as a whole. That's still going through the process. He still has one more meeting with the Land Commission, and then ultimate public hearing, and then a vote from the village board. So hopefully within that time frame, then we'll have a better understanding exactly what it is. But you're going to know the shell is this. This is what it looks like.
We're endorsing the concept right now.
Correct.
And when do they expect to break ground?
Their hopes are yet this fall. It's sad to say that when it's September 4th, but this fall.
And complete complete construction by the spring?
Probably late spring, early summer.
Okay. So if we put something in there, just whether we have to put it in the developer's agreement or not, but I don't think it will hurt, just to say that continues to work with staff on potential businesses, and that we have the ability to see if it aligns with our core values.
And kind of going back to what Trustee Green indicated, you know, again, the type of business is going to have to be conducted. conducive to
the whole parking situation.
Yeah. But there's a lot to take into consideration of, you know, restaurant brewery, obviously is probably the most dense parking to the site.
Yeah. Okay. You're good? Okay. Do you want the addition, or do you want staff to continue to work with him?
I wanted to bring it up to just talk through it. Okay. I think we brought up very good points to make sure we're all aware of, and with the reputation of Delivers in the community, I'm not fearful. I just would rather have talked through it. So, no, I'm good.
If we're able, I do like the ability to, if they're going to come in with retail, what kind of retail is it?
If we just leave restaurant in there, we don't have to worry about that till later.
Right. But he's asking for a change to the agreement, correct or no?
That is a suggested change, correct.
One, two, three. I hate to keep going back and forth.
No, I'm good with that. I've just...
Okay. So you're good with staff working with Mr. Deliers and letting him know that he should work with you on the types of businesses, or he should alert you. Okay. Okay. We have a motion with an amendment with contingent upon proof of financing and a second to that. Any further discussion?
That'll also include all the different items Brad brought up with regard to centralized garbage, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Yes?
Okay. Yep.
Just making sure.
Good with that, gentlemen? Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We have a developer's agreement. Thank you very much. Just take a quick opportunity to thank both Brad and Trevor, who have worked very hard on this, and our entire staff, actually. I know Julie was very involved in it. I'm sure Sean was involved in it. Chris may have driven by. Staff has worked, yeah, Chris cuts the grass. But staff has worked very hard on this project. It's been a very complicated project. So congratulations, and thank you very much for your hard work. Moving on, we are agenda item number 7, action regarding final land exchange agreement with Green Bay Public School District at PHM Webster Park and Webster School. Mr. Clark, would you like to explain the project real quick? You want to come up here? Give us your name and address.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You can give us your work address. Just kidding.
This is just the final agreement of a land exchange that we've been working with the Green Bay Public School District on at Webster School and Webster Park. Initially, with the construction, the new addition that the school district was putting onto the back of the school, they were encroaching on some of the village's park property. So we began discussions with them on that aspect of an easement or something along that lines. And we looked at the overall properties, and they had some other needs as well with regards to needing to move... include additional parking lot, move some playground area, do some of that work as well. So with that, we looked at an exchange of properties, which would include about 1 acre of their property going to the village and about 1.5 acres of the village's property going to the school district to accommodate those new construction and parking lot and such. Part of their construction also included a stormwater basin that was required by the Public Works Department that will be on the actual Parcel D which is village property, but the school district will have to maintain that through perpetuity as long as that's there. So, so what you have in front of you is the final version that the attorneys have been working on, which also includes a couple of aspects of the village will be able to utilize the new parking and area that they're installing during non-school hours, which will benefit any of our park users, especially our baseball and football groups that utilize Webster Park. And in addition, the new addition that is going, that they're constructing, is a stage area that our recreation program will utilize at no fee for a 10-year period. Currently, we utilize a public school district auditorium, and we're charged a fee for that, so this will be in, at no fee for us for that program.
So. I saw in that piece of it that we will have it for two nights a week.
Correct. That is correct. That's the way the attorneys wrote that, so we utilize it for other programming if we see the need.
That was my question. It shows that we use it, can use it for recreational purposes or recreational program purposes.
Sure.
Is there a way to tweak it to include village purposes?
I am sure there is. Yeah, we can discuss that with them. I don't see it being a big issue.
Frequently.
Correct. Just what type of purpose it would be.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, a nice big presentation for a large group of people.
Correct.
How many seats do they expect in that?
You recall, Trevor, how big that was going to be?
I mean, it's not going to be huge.
No, because it was going to utilize their current gym space for the seating portion of it.
Okay.
So, if I recall, is that right?
Right. And they're just adding the stage and storage facility behind that now.
Okay. But that, I would like to have that tweak.
Sure. I will talk to the attorney tomorrow and see if we can get that.
I think it might just be a matter of taking out the word recreation and put village purposes.
Yeah,
exactly.
Covers the umbrella.
And of course, you have to do it and make the request in writing anyway. If they had an issue with something, they can always say it's not a good idea.
Sure. Okay.
Chris, I did have one question regarding the swap on property. Now, currently, we have a pretty dilapidated tennis court there that we're going to have to tear out. They're tearing that out at their expense, correct?
The tennis court would become their property, so that they can do with it what they wish.
Perfect.
They have stated that they are in need of level play space because of the sloping of that area. So they may or may not, remove that to accommodate that play space.
But it's on them.
Correct.
Good.
Okay. Any other questions for Chris? Trustee Harris.
Just had one thing to maybe add in terms of wording.
Sure.
In terms of extending out the agreement, I know you replied to me on that.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the village providing adequate number of competent personnel to supervise all activities at the school, I realize it might be understood, but I'd rather have it say all village scheduled activities at Webster Elementary School.
Oh, okay. So, yes. So we're not supervising their activities or any other activities,
correct.
Just the ones that
correct.
We have scheduled.
I know, I understand it's part of the agreement, but just the specific language.
Okay.
Any other questions for Chris? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Been working on this for a while, too. Yeah. Thanks, Chris. Okay, do we have a motion on this item?
Move to approve.
With the recommended
changes, two wordings issues.
Trustee Harris, second?
Yes.
Any discussion? I think it's another great example of two organizations working together to come to a common solution that benefits all. So thank you very much, and thank you to the school district. We have a motion to approve with the changes and the second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Action item number 8, noise variance permit request for block party on Jamestown Court on September 15th, 2018
from noon. It says till 10, but I see that they changed their request to 9 on the back of their application. So on the block party request form, it says to, and they scratched out 10, or someone did, and put 9 p.m. Is that because of our noise ordinance?
It's just going to 9 instead of 11, so I just move to approve.
Yeah. But on the front of it, it says 10.
One side says 10, one side says 9.
Oh.
Noise variance.
So do we want to approve it with a certain time ending?
I'll second Rob's motion and approve till 9.
Any discussion?
The request is till 10.
But it's who does this?
Because it says all block parties must end at 9, so this side is changed to 9, and the other side says 10. Oh, that's the block party request form is on one side,
right,
and the noise application is on the other side. Variance.
Okay.
So the noise variance says 10, and the block party says 9.
I gotcha. So they're asking for a variance till 10. Do I have a motion on this item? Trustee Atlas.
Move to approve.
Seconded by Trustee Harris.
Okay. Yes.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. And they do say we can turn it down if outside
I didn't get
reasonable.
Invited. I didn't get invited. 9.
Ten's too late.
Trustee Atwood wants to be invited. Action item number 9, Neighborhood Watch and Neighborhood Association Policy. Mr. Fuller.
Yes, this is a project we've been working on for a couple years, trying to integrate neighborhood associations, a program that the city of Green Bay is able to utilize to help disseminate information to the public better. They have one central person within a geographic region to notify meetings or any events or road projects going on like that. That centralized person then has an email address or has direct contact with their neighborhood, and it's an efficient way to bring more information to the public. It also creates, more of a community feel within a neighborhood. So as part of this, we've been working on this. There's two approaches to take with something like this. You have the Neighborhood Watch, which is more of what Jason with Brown County Sheriff handles, which he can certainly speak to. And then there's the Neighborhood Association, which is a little less, I think, defined in scope. Neighborhood Watch may look more at crime-related things, whereas a neighborhood association can look at a number of different things within that neighborhood. Neighborhood association is also typically larger, whereas a Neighborhood Watch, Jason, correct me if I'm wrong, is maybe a block or two. So we discussed this a couple years ago. I've been working on this here and there. I think Trustee Green's neighborhood has a association, and there's also a loosely defined one up in the Derby Lane area, the Brockton Hill Neighborhood Association. I had the intern that we had this summer take pretty much the same information that was being provided to with Green Bay, the City of Green Bay's program, and put it into a pamphlet that we could hand out to residents. So that's basically what this is. It's more or less the same information, because that's the information we discussed a couple years ago. I'm definitely open to changes on this, but in doing this, I realized that we don't have a defined or adopted policy on what a neighborhood association should be, what a recognized association should be. I certainly don't, and this may be an extreme, but you certainly don't want to have an individual saying they represent a neighborhood and in fact do not. And so probably is in our best interest, and this might not be decided tonight, but to have a discussion on if we want to continue with this program, what exactly, what are the parameters we're looking for to define and have a village-recognized neighborhood association. And then maybe also what type of efforts we want to, again, if we want to continue forward with this, what kind of efforts we want to put forward in promoting this. So I guess originally started out with just a pamphlet and kind of morphed into a bigger discussion.
Well, it's a good discussion to have. How do neighborhood associations conduct traffic studies?
So the city of Green Bay is I think different than what we would necessarily have the capabilities for. The city of Green Bay has a arm of the city that's a 501c3, and then all the neighborhood associations are able to operate using that 501c3 status. They're able to get donations and that sort of thing. I think to do a full-blown traffic study would be unrealistic for a neighborhood association per se, but they might be able to work with Brown County Sheriff's and get maybe a speed study or something.
Speed study, yes. Well, that's what I was thinking. They could surely work with the village. If they felt a need for a traffic study, they could certainly ask for one, right, as an association. Okay. Any questions for Trevor?
I think it's a great idea.
A good effort on this, and I think a couple weeks ago when we had people from Derby Lane neighborhood, they're seemingly becoming more active, and maybe it would be a good example to present them with a draft of this and say, how about some feedback? What do you think? Does this kind of describe what you're hoping to do as a neighborhood group there and any other ones that are functioning currently?
Is there some kind of form or informational thing that has to be filed with the village in order to function, is that?
Not currently, no. I think some of the experiences that the city of Green Bay has had. They've had neighborhood associations that have started, and then that individual that has been real passionate about it has moved away, and they've pretty much dissolved. They lose a contact person or something like that. So I agree with maybe what you're getting to. We need to have a consistent form of...
How do we know?
How do we know who's in it? That's kind of the point behind having at least a meeting, an annual meeting or something.
Contact name.
Yes, a contact name, mission statement, and then if they have a block party, it would be great for, you know, I think as an elected official, it would be a great opportunity for you all to possibly attend or at least know about so that you can go and hear some of their concerns or ideas that they may have.
Yeah, and to your point, Penny, where a board of directors is elected, you could have the board of directors for any association registered with the village. That way we'd know all of them in case one of them moved away. I would recommend, I do like this as well, and I think if we can throw in anything about how do I start one, not only what does it do, but how do we start one? And when we say interested in getting started, we should tell them who they are to contact in the village. If there isn't one person or a position.
You know, I would even take that a step further and identify in here that this is a criteria to be recognized by the village as a neighborhood association. We obviously cannot, and I wouldn't want to stop anybody in their neighborhood from a gathering.
Right.
But to be recognized by the village as a neighborhood association, they have to submit their agenda and their meeting minutes from those three meetings and a contact name and the criteria laid out in there in order to be recognized by the village. Otherwise, these things will pop up and they'll disintegrate when the major player moves out of the area, should that happen, and then they just go away, and then we sit there and have no idea. Right. So if there's a paper trail, I'm submitting it in recognition by the village.
Yep.
I think it makes it cleaner.
I agree it makes it cleaner, but it also makes it less likely someone will step up and do it.
Well, if
I don't want to discourage people either, so I want to keep it simple.
Yeah, I do too.
Maybe a panel on how the village can help the association, so the benefits of making an official neighborhood association. Obviously, the village would work with them to help them be successful.
Providing them a sign, neighborhood association sign.
Yeah.
Because those neighborhood watch signs are, that's why they do it, some of them.
So they get a sign?
They love those, they wanted their neighborhood watch signs back. Because we took them down for a while, I know. Because they weren't practicing, and you got them going again. The village would provide a sign that made them something. They love them. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I think that's a different concept, because if you have a neighborhood watch sign, they feel a little bit more protected. Neighborhood association, I don't think, is a protective body, so they might not feel the same about the sign. But it's sort of like a beware of dog sign, the neighborhood watch. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't have a dog. I'm not sure that they would react the same.
So you're really looking, Trevor, are you looking for guidance from the board, or are you...
I am looking for a little bit of guidance, yes. I think I started out with a simple task, and I kind of complicated it for myself, so I would appreciate some guidance.
Does anyone have guidance for this young man?
Well, I think the suggestions that I made on there too, but maybe three meetings a year. That agendas and minutes have to be provided might be a little much. Maybe an annual meeting that is something formally that is submitted to the village to be recognized. That what that does is it at least it gives. Yeah.
Annually is a whole lot easier.
Exactly, than 3 years.
Getting that many volunteers together. I can tell you from Jim Poehler, our association president, trying to get everybody together numerous times a year,
it's tough.
It has been. So, yeah.
But I do think you have to clearly define the geographical area in a contact person, you know, at least one meeting in order to be recognized by the village. Otherwise, we have no recourse. You go and take down signs, and who do you contact? That the sign is coming down, you know, or to put one up, who do you contact? So maybe reduce the number of meetings, you know, and maybe turn what does a neighborhood watch or a neighborhood association do into suggestions, you know.
I think the idea of somewhere having it also on to be recognized by the village, and then what they need to do to be recognized. I mean, I think that should be in the brochure somewhere. Those words.
Okay. I have a request from the floor to speak. Do I have a motion? Trustee Genrich,
suspend the rules.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Trustee Dart, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Northwood Avenue. I've been coming to a lot of these meetings, and I have noticed grassroots organizations from different neighborhoods spring up around specific issues, and then they settle down. Typically around sidewalks, around zoning changes, around new gas stations going in. I think we've had about five different grassroots associations just show up. And they showed up, and they didn't have to go to the village to say, can we get together and protest, make the village hear what we want to hear. So I think that there's a danger in making it too onerous to form an association, even if it's even if it's not very difficult. The village should not be telling neighborhoods that it's bad for them to get together to discuss what's going on in their neighborhood. There's 528 blocks in our village.
Who is saying that?
Yeah, nobody's saying that.
Yeah.
So I've been here. Okay, so you're the village. And then people...
No, we are the village.
You're the village board. You're the village board. Okay? And there's 528 blocks, according to the Pacer study, of village-owned streets. Okay, so there's 528 blocks. So there's a lot of people who have no reason to come to these meetings once every 10 years, 20 years. They're concerned about their sidewalks, they're concerned about their streets, and they're concerned maybe about a yield sign, typically public works types of questions. So the public works meeting should be recorded and put online so people can know, and people should know what their PACER rating is on their street. And then,
Jim, let's
then
stick to the,
that's
stick
where
to
I'm
the,
going with it. So
let's stick to
there,
it.
There, we talked about block parties and neighborhood associations and neighborhood watches. They're all tied together, and if the neighborhood doesn't have any problems, they don't need to come to the meetings. But if something comes up, you shouldn't say that you're not a recognized neighborhood association because you haven't had your annual meeting yet. For example, the feed on Martha Street came up because somebody wanted to build 11 condos on two single-family lots. So that there's a lot of reasons why people want to get together, and you shouldn't have something that says that the village won't recognize a neighborhood association. So a neighborhood association should be able to be formed at a grassroots level by people who want to get together, and if it's two or three blocks, that's okay. The Robinson Hill Neighborhood Association is geographically defined, but that was defined by the state. So there's a couple houses on there that should be part of that association that aren't defined by the State Historical Society. So I'm just saying that you shouldn't put too many regulations on starting an organization. If they want to come and protest here, you shouldn't say that only because five people showed up and there's 20 people in your neighborhood that you're not an association. So that's what I've seen in the past with regards to people showing up. So people are interested in participating when there's an issue that they have a problem with, whether it's a yield sign, whether it's a bad road, or whatever it is. Thanks.
Thank you. We'll take a motion to pick up the rules. Trustee Atwood, followed by Trustee Genrich. All those in favor signify by saying
aye.
Aye. Opposed. Just to clarify,
I would like to clarify first. At no point, and I'll address the board here, did I ever suggest that if you are not a part of association, you can't come here and express your concern. In fact, I said just the opposite. Everybody is welcome to come here for any reason. To form an association and to be recognized by the village, I'm suggesting that these are really great criteria that Trevor put together. So how this went from that to that,
yes.
I have no idea.
Okay. Can I pick a crack? Maybe you have some valid comments, but I would say that anything here is the citizen might have had some valid comments, but I would think neighborhoods are additive. You know, we had the guys from Simonette neighborhood, and we heard that and all took that at face value and appreciated the input. It would be additive if there's a Simonette or Heritage Hill neighborhood, if they would come in and say, oh, we had a meeting and, you know, 5 or 15 or 50 people came, so we're coming to you and on behalf of that group. You know, that does not take away from the couple people who really extraordinary. They took the time, they came in, they said, well, they want to look, what the heck, talk to the village. Okay. So I would think it's a benefit to have both. And yeah,
absolutely.
You were not saying
I agree
that they would supersede or have we would give more weight. We would give different weight to if it's an issue specific, if there is a neighborhood group. Even that, you got to weigh with a grain of salt.
To that point, we've always been open as a board to hear public comment. In fact, we've suspended rules during a regular meeting on numerous occasions to hear public opinion. So I just wanted to be clear and on the record. So
and from residents and non-residents, from associations, from individuals, from Boy Scout troops, from Girl Scout troops, so we're glad you guys came from Seminet tonight because you're an exact example of that because we have. And we don't want there to be any ambiguity out there thinking that we don't. So
I think one of the other points is by being recognized by the village, it gives us the opportunity for a two-way communication. Otherwise, you're just getting something like, for instance, the Derby League people, they say, well, work with us, you know? Well, let's see, what are we working with? Who are we working with?
I agree.
I think it's, you can't have a two-way street if you don't have both phone numbers, I mean, really. And certainly it isn't meant to...
Trevor, have you got enough yet?
I would just like to add a few so thank you for the input. Speaking with the city of Green Bay, again, I'm referencing them because they're really the only municipality in this area. The city of Appleton has one. But speaking with the city of Green Bay, traditionally how to target, I guess, a group to start a neighborhood association is a group maybe that has a historic district within their association. So I know there was reference before to the Robinson Hill. The Robinson Hill Historic District is a collection of 84 homes. However, the Robinson Hill Neighborhood Association, the geographic boundaries go and encompass, I think, 150 homes. They go from Webster to Riverside. So the two aren't, you don't need one to have the other. They don't define each other. They might bring a neighborhood together along a similar issue, but then the neighborhood association typically will build upon that. Another good way to start a neighborhood association is maybe to talk to a neighborhood watch. So maybe there's a collection of three or four blocks with neighborhood watches. So they still each have their individual neighborhood watches, but collectively they could form a neighborhood association, have a broader geographic range. And in the third way that the city of Green Bay mentioned is a lot of times these residents come together over a certain situation, like was mentioned, sidewalks or zoning changes or something. So that's a singular issue that maybe the neighborhood just has that one concern and then they're done. Or maybe they have that concern and they want it brought them together and that particular issue is brought them together to form the association. So those are some of the target or the triggers to go after, I guess, but definitely not exclusive either, but just wanted to make sure that that's clear.
Thank you. Have we provided you with enough direction at this point in time?
Thank you.
Go be directed. We will move on to action item number 10, resolution 2018-12, transportation aids. Mr. Lane.
I'll take this. We need more money to maintain our roadways. And there is a resolution that a number of communities, local communities, have passed, and I would urge that you would support this resolution and pass it. To tell the governor that, that we need a sustainable solution to increase funding to the local governments.
Trustee Green.
Move to approve.
Second by Trustee Gehrig.
You did it very succinctly. I mean, I don't know what there is to argue with that because we do.
Well,
any discussion?
This is a can thing. Now, do we have the ability to strike a paragraph here or there?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I would move at the first page, the item at the bottom is a non sequitur, whereas from a competitive standpoint, it should be comparative or, but from a competitive standpoint, if we have the lowest gas tax and vehicle registration fee, in the eyes of the people we're petitioning, that makes us number one. It doesn't make us last. So we can either change the word or we can just strike that. If one of those states is Illinois, well, fine. They're about bankrupt and they're not paying their lottery winners or some of their employees. So, you know, what other states are doing, unless the point is to say there's room to increase it, that we won't lose our competitive advantage. But I just, the Senate might change hands, the Assembly won't. Government would change hands, but from a competitive stand, that just to me is a non-sequitur, and I would say get rid of that.
So what would you like to propose on that?
Just take that off.
The whole paragraph?
Yeah.
Trustee Green?
I agree. Amend the motion.
Trustee Genrich, you're good?
Sure.
And then the other one to take out is whereas states surrounding Wisconsin across the country have stepped up with sustainable funding plans for their state and local roads. That just seems a little naggy and whiny to me. If you're petitioning the current people in Madison,
do you have a proposed?
Just to delete it, and it doesn't hurt them. It's kind of irrelevant.
I'm good.
Trustee Genrich, any more?
It's irrelevant. Maybe theirs were lower or higher to begin with. I don't.
We got our point.
They did it. Well, you know, why don't we do it? Well, there's a lot of reasons why. We're number one by measure of the last ones. Anyways, that's my 2 cents.
Depending on which stick you're using, right?
Yeah.
Which one are we? Okay, so we are getting rid of where states surrounding Wisconsin.
Okay.
And the bottom one.
Okay.
Okay, we have a motion to approve while striking paragraph 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 11. And a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Good points, Trustee Sampson. Action item number 11, we'll take them all as one if there's no opposition. Action item 11A through D, consent agenda. Do I have a motion, Trustee Harris?
Move to approve.
And a second. Trustee Dart, any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Item number 12, future agenda items. Is there a board member who would like to see something put on a future agenda item?
I'd like to revisit the invitation for our state.
Okay. Regarding the brakes and all that?
Yeah, brakes and what was the main issue that we're going to have here for? Riverside, the Crossrock, Riverside Drive and 172.
Okay. Any others? Hearing none, we'll move on to item number 13. Do I have a motion to convene in a closed session pursuant to Wisconsin Statute 1985-1E, deliberating or negotiating the purchasing of public properties, the investing of public funds, or conducting other specified public business whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require a closed session, specifically sale of 1677 South Webster.
Trustee motion.
Trustee Genrich, seconded by Trustee Dart. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Roll call. Trustee Harris.
Aye.
Trustee Genrich.
Aye.
Trustee Atwood.
Aye.
President aye. President Rafter, aye. Trustee Dirt,
aye.
Trustee Green,
aye.
Trustee Sampson,
aye.
We are enclosed.